Welcome to Sci-Fi and Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr as SF in Color. And today we'll be covering Doctor Who. Two episodes. A Family of Blood.
You got the order a little mixed up.
Human Nature and A Family of Blood.
Right. So this is a two-parter from season three. So let's see. I think it's season three, episode eight and nine. Originally broadcast 26th of May 2007, and then Family of Blood I think came out the next week, which was June 2nd, 2007. So this was a long time ago. 11 years? Not 11 ago. Years.
10 years ago. That's not ages too much.
Yeah, it was like 10, 9-ish years ago. And Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. We both have...
Yes, we have...
mixed feelings about Doctor Who.
Yeah, so... I used to be a humongous fan of Doctor Who. I got into the show probably around 2010. I quickly became a very big...
That's 7 years ago. Sorry.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
I
got into the show...
I'm not dealing with aging.
7 years ago. Now is not the time to have an existential crisis, Melissa. I got into the show around 2010. I had seen it on BBC America. Actually, I think this episode, Family of Blood, which is the end of this two-parter, I think the first time I ever saw Doctor Who ever, I caught, like, the last couple minutes of this Family of Blood episode. And I was like, this is weird. I have no idea what's going on. Okay, bye, whatever. And then I saw the ending, again, to a different episode, which was the Vincent Van Gogh episode, and I was crying my eyes out, and I was like, oh my god, I need to know more about the show. Because at the time I was watching BBC America because I was really obsessed with Star Trek, and they were playing a lot of Star Trek The Next Generation for some reason. I guess because Patrick Stewart is British and that's why they played it on BBC America. There was really no good reason for it to be playing on that channel. But anyway, so I was watching a lot of TNG, kept seeing these ads for the upcoming episode, which was like The Lodger, which features, what's his face? James Corden. And I found the episode ad infuriating. Like, it was actually really annoying, and I really wanted to know what was going to happen. So I watched it, and I was like, okay, maybe not the best episode to start with when you're first watching Doctor Who. It's pretty confusing, but it was good. So then I eventually got into the rest of the show. And so technically, this two-parter, or the end of the two-parter, was the first time I'd ever seen any Doctor Who, ever. But that's not the reason why we picked this episode. The reason I picked this episode to showcase was, like, one, didn't really want to watch the whole Doctor Who series. And because we are focused on POC, I chose to pick an episode or two episodes from the season featuring Martha. So Martha is a companion in this season. She's a woman of color. And then also these two episodes are, like, I think... kind of do delve more into race than the other episodes featuring Martha. So I kind of was... And also, these episodes are very... I think they got some awards and stuff. Like, they were pretty well-liked by the audience back in 07. So that's kind of background on why I wanted to focus on these two episodes. And it's been a long time since I've seen these two episodes. So, Melissa, what did you think of the two-parter?
Well, I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So I should go back a bit. I started watching Doctor Who.
Because of me.
And another mutual friend of ours. Yes. Also watched the show.
Yes.
And they had shown me just kind of a few random episodes here and there. And it was good, but... I'm not someone who's very good at watching shows out of order.
Right.
It doesn't really... this doesn't do it for me. I need to know all of the emotional arcs and all the plot notes that we're supposed to be hitting. So I said, okay, I'm going to try and watch from the beginning. Not the beginning, but from the, you know, revival beginning.
Right. So Doctor Who, for those of you who don't know, it first came out in, I want to say, the 50s or 60s. I did not. I have to go click a link and check.
Whatever.
My Whatever. God. So the original one came out
back in the day.
Back in the day. No, no, no. 1963. I was right. It came out on BBC One in 1963, and that stretched on for a good while. So the original show was 63 to like probably like 89 or so. It was on for a while, and I want to say it spanned from the first Doctor. And we should probably give some background on Doctor Who for people who don't know or who aren't familiar with it too. But so there's multiple iterations of the Doctor. So the first Doctor, all the way to I want to say the seventh Doctor, were on TV in the original run. Then the TV show was done. They had a movie with the eighth Doctor, and then in 2005 they had the revival or the new version of Doctor Who, which featured the ninth Doctor, the tenth Doctor, the 11th Doctor, and now currently the 12th Doctor. And to kind of just briefly touch on what Doctor Who is, I guess I'll give you the abbreviated Wikipedia version. So the program depicts the adventures of a Time Lord called the Doctor. So a Time Lord is an alien, an extraterrestrial being from the planet Gallifrey, whatever. He explores the universe in a time-traveling spaceship called the TARDIS, which looks like a blue British police box, common in 63 when the series first aired. Accompanied by a number of companions, the Doctor combats a variety of foes while working to save civilizations, Earth civilizations generally, and help people in need. It's like super, super big in Britain. It's very much like, I don't know, it's very ingrained in British pop culture. And I think especially with the new version of Doctor Who, it's seen more kind of a popularity in other countries.
Widespread popularity.
Yeah. So that's kind of Doctor Who, summing it up for you. It's an alien who saves Earth constantly with human companions, and it's just a fun show. What I liked about it, what drew me to it, was it's always like, it can go from being a really, wacky show to a really serious show. Sometimes you get, like, weird historical episodes where you, like, deal with, like, I don't know, Agatha Christie, and, like, weird bee monsters, or, like, sometimes you get, like, really serious stuff. Like, I think, human nature, and family blood can be kind of goofy, but generally is a little more serious subject matter than some of the other Doctor Who episodes. It can be pure fantasy sci-fi. Sometimes it's, like, weird alternate historical fiction. Like, it's just a fun show, generally speaking. And it also can be terrifying. Like, sometimes there are some horror-esque episodes of Doctor Who, and it's just like, I can't believe this is a family show. Okay. So that's kind of just background, if you're not familiar with Doctor Who.
Yeah. So I started watching, I believe it was around 2012. And I started with the
I didn't season. Show you stuff in 2011?
No, I'm sure you did, but that's when I really, like,
oh, really got into it. Gotcha.
It might even be after that.
2013?
Whatever. Irregardless.
Sure.
It's not a word. LOL. Someone said that to me today. He was like, irregardless. And I was like,
no.
I want to gouge out your eyes. I didn't say
that. Oh, okay. Dang.
Anyway, so I started watching and I really, really loved it. It was really good. And I fell in love with the ninth Doctor and then the tenth Doctor and the first companion, who was Rose, and still kind of.
No love for 11? No love for 11? Come on, man.
No, I really don't.
Okay.
You know, when they change over to the 11th Doctor and they switch showrunners.
It was a different show.
It really, really was. And so, like, neither of us currently watch the show, as much as we're like, wow, this show is awesome. Neither of us currently watch.
Yeah, so, also, I guess we didn't really explain the whole iterations thing, but basically, anytime they want to switch actors for the, anytime they want to.
The Doctor.
Well, yeah, so anytime they want to switch whoever the actor is for the Doctor, they, like, the Doctor character.
Doctor is like a cat. He has multiple lives.
Yeah, he dies. Anyway, the Doctor dies, but then regenerates and gains a new body and a new, like, I don't know, I guess a new personality. I mean, yeah, I guess it's more like much. There's, like, there's different facets to his personality. They, you know, they depending on who he is in this iteration, different, like, parts shine through. So, yeah, they all have kind of different personalities, give or take. So the ninth is very, like, snarky, and Melissa's dream guy, obviously.
I mean, I love 9. I also love 10. I mean,
who doesn't like 10, though? Like, everyone loves 10. Everyone loves the 10th Doctor. No one... I don't know anyone who doesn't like the 10th Doctor. Put it that way.
He's everything that the Doctor should be, mm-hmm. I think. And he walks the line really well between being a know-it-all, being compassionate, and being mean and dark.
He's great. Oh, also, I read this on Wikipedia the other day, so I'm gonna read it to you. At the age of 3, Tennant told his parents that he wanted to become an actor because he was a fan of Doctor Who, but they tried to encourage him to aim for more conventional work. He watched almost every Doctor Who episode for years, and he spoke to Tom Baker, the 4th Doctor, at the book signing event in Glasgow. Tennant said he was absurdly single-minded in pursuing an acting career. So he basically became an actor because of Doctor Who, and then he got to live his dream and play the Doctor for, like, three seasons? So that dude has lived his dream, essentially. The only reason he became an actor is because he wanted to, like, be the Doctor. And he became the Doctor eventually.
He became an amazing Doctor.
Yeah. Super fan.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
Oh, Tennant is the man who plays the 10th Doctor, if you didn't know that. But anyway.
Who is the iteration of... in this episode.
That we're covering, yes. These episodes we're talking about.
So let's, get into it. I mean, neither of us currently watch the show.
Right. So for me,
it transformed.
It kind of just boils down to the writing, I think, for me. I thought the writing became kind of worse. And I was just disappointed with how the stories and the characters were being treated. So I kind of stopped watching the show. I think I stopped in the middle of the 7th season of the new one. So that's kind of where... I think I stopped watching in 2013. So I actually haven't watched any new Doctor Who for the past 4 or so years. Just because I was just not really thrilled with how the characters were treated. The showrunner for the first 4 seasons was Russell T. Davies. And then it switched over to Stephen Moffat. So... some background real quick, I don't want to get too into it, but Stephen Moffat was known for these, like, great standout episodes in the first couple seasons. Like, I think he did Girl in the Fireplace, he did the season 4 Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead two-parter, he did Blink, and that's a classic Doctor Who episode that everyone loves to watch, is Blink with the Weeping Angels. So he did a lot of great standalone episodes, but overall, I personally feel like as a showrunner, he's not very good with long overarching storylines or plots. I get the feeling that maybe he used to be a better writer and now he just kind of relies on certain tricks. He's like the M. Night Shyamalan, I'd say. Like, he had his moment, he had his heyday, but like now it's just getting old because he kind of repeats his material a lot. And I just really don't like... I mean, literally, I've seen Sherlock, which he also... was a showrunner for, and like River Song's character in Doctor Who and Irene Adler's character in Sherlock are like basically the same person. They literally do the same thing where they fall out of window backwards and are like, they look the same character. So I'm just not crazy about Stephen Moffat's stuff. I mean, I started watching Doctor Who like season 5, which is Stephen Moffat's first like season where he was running Doctor Who, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. But when I think about the seasons overall, in total, I would not say that season 5, 6, or 7 were particularly strong. I would definitely say the first 4 seasons were much stronger, writing-wise. Especially season 4, yeah. I'd say. Probably, like, 1, 2, and 4, I think, were, like, the strongest. Sorry, Martha.
everyone is...
Yeah.
I can't say what I want to say.
You can say what you want to say. Why are you censoring yourself? Is it bad?
Everyone on Martha.
Yeah, she gets the short end of the stick, man. It's, yeah, hold on. I also gotta figure out when you curse, because I gotta bleep it out. But, yeah, no. I mean, she definitely gets the short end of the stick. I mean...
Oh, the thing about her, honestly, and okay, so, like, I have a lot of feelings about the episodes that we watched, and I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that watching them out of order like we did, you know, just watching two random episodes versus watching them in sequence, right?
Right.
And so, I loved Rose, the first companion who was there seasons 1 and 2, and then Martha took up at season 3, and I mean, I loved Rose so much. It was so hard to have someone follow in her footsteps. And so,
yeah, she was a great companion. It's hard to, yeah.
And she was a really good love interest for the Doctor. I felt
tough
like
act to
really,
follow. Tough act to follow.
They're really balanced. And I think making Martha kind of lovesick over the Doctor was the wrong move.
Yeah, honestly. I think it kind of took away from her
because the Doctor
character.
He was still in love with Rose.
Yeah.
The whole season.
Yeah.
He could never feel anything like that towards Martha. And I think they got it right in season 4 where they had a companion who wasn't a love interest.
That's why people love Donna, man. Because she is that, like, pure platonic, like, awesome friend, you know?
Yeah.
And it works.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. I wish Martha hadn't had that aspect of her personality, because otherwise she was really, really great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had forgotten how awesome she was, and I've forgotten, like, how awesome Doctor Who used to be. Because,
yeah, right?
Like, it's ridiculous.
Oh, it is completely ridiculous.
It should not work, you know?
This, like, episode has some of the cheesiest moments and the cheesiest, hammiest, crazy acting. But I don't care because it's so good.
Exactly. It really is. And
it's just so fun. It's just so fun.
It works. And, like, that balance of humor and horror and heart. I mean, it's so precipitous. And just with the slightest little push, everything gets pushed out of whack. And that's what I feel like happened.
With Moffat,
honestly.
Yeah.
With Moffat, yeah. For me, one of the big things is really the heart. The fact
the heart was gone, yeah.
Which is ironic because the Doctor has 2.
But <Ba-dum-tsh. laughs> Yeah. That's what I just did, yes.
See, it's twice.
Oh, you're funny. You're funny.
And... No, I'm not. Anyway, it's just, you know, like, I think one of the reasons that a Doctor Who works, and specifically 10 works, is because he's so...
Full of heart.
Yes. He's so compassionate towards the world, all while basically hating himself.
I mean, that's a trend that we've seen with all these, like, modern doctors. It's like they have this deep, brooding angst about who they are. Because, like, they've done all these evil, dark things. And, you know, they do mention it in this episode when the 1913 love interest is basically, like, wherever you go, I mean, if you weren't here, would people have died? Which is such a, like... That's such a Doctor Who thing, because, like, you know, especially David Tennant, towards the end of, like, the 10th Doctor's arc, you see he's, like, so tormented by these questions of, like, well, I'm responsible, like, I'm, you know, he's responsible for some great things, but also people are dying because of him. People have sacrificed themselves to save him or whatever. Oh, Lord, like, can we talk about the ending arc for the 10th? That was some crazy-ish.
Well, you mean, like, between seasons 4 and 5?
Oh, yeah, dude, like, that whole thing where he basically turns into a freaking... So, like, Russell T. Davies, the showrunner, he's an atheist, but he basically does, like, a ton of things in story that make the 10th Doctor look like Jesus. I mean, I swear to God, it's, like, the weirdest thing. You know what I'm talking about, right, Melissa?
I know exactly.
Yeah.
I basically pretend that doesn't happen.
I mean, it's so great and terrible at the same time. I kind of have to appreciate it just because it's so, like,
it's done
intense.
Really well, but it's really painful.
It is painful.
To watch.
It's the most angsty thing. And, like, David Tennant does angst so well. He's such a great actor.
Does.
And it's
he
just,
really
it's
is.
It's just, good. Oh, by the way, so, I mean, I'm a big fan of David Tennant's acting. And not just because of Doctor Who. And I just remember there was one time I was watching... It was, like, one of the earlier Martha episodes. It was, like, I think John Barrowman was in it. Freema Agyeman was in it. I never know how to pronounce her last name. And then David Tennant was in it. I had the TV on mute, and I turned around and just, like, kind of looked at them for a little bit. And when you have the TV on mute, you can kind of see how good someone's acting is. So, like, Barrowman and Agumon, they were, like, okay, I guess. They were a little hammy, but whatever. Then it cut to a shot of David Tennant acting. And again, it was all on mute, right? So, like, there's no distracting music to take away from how good or bad the acting is. David Tennant was, like, leagues better than they were acting-wise. Like, and that came across very strongly because I had the TV on mute. And I was like, wow, he is very, very skilled.
Yeah, there are just some actors who can really portray, like, the tiniest bit of emotion.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
On their face. And, like, it's just, like, a flicker. And it's just so genuine. And I think he's one of the actors who's really good at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where he can convey multiple things in just a look. We could just spend this whole episode fawning over him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just shouldn't. Yeah, let's not do that. But I do think he's a great actor, and I'm always happy to watch episodes with him. Even if there's some, like, really bad episodes, I mean, he kind of elevates it somehow.
Here's the thing. Like, watching this, and the reason we're talking, one of the reasons, at least, we're talking about all this backstory is because this is the baggage that we come into this episode with, you know? And so, I haven't watched Doctor Who in years, and so I sit down.
Wow, I forgot. It's been a long time for me, too, I guess. Yeah, I don't think I've really sat down and watched anything.
I sit down and watch this episode, and I love it. I forget how much I love it.
It's so fun. It's so fun.
And, like, at the time when I was watching it, I binge watched. I remember it was, like, during, like, exam time, and it was probably not a good school choice, but whatever. And, you know, I mean, all the seasons when you binge watch, they pass in a blur. And so, like, it felt like I was still mourning Rose, and I was watching season 3. And there are some episodes in season 3 that I don't really care for.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
But, like, this one is so good. I actually, when we were talking about re-watching this one to talk about it, I remember the cliffhanger between the two episodes.
I did not remember the cliffhanger.
But I must have had to, you know, do something else between them, because I remember that cliffhanger so well. It's one of my favorite breaks between two-parters, because it is just how
that's such a classic, like, friend or lover. Like, oh my god, it's such a classic, like, villain thing.
It is such.
But it works!
It works for Doctor Who.
Yes.
It plays it seriously.
But not
too seriously.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, like, in these two episodes, like, the monsters, like, you know, scarecrows moving around, that's pretty freaky. But, like, the villains themselves are so over the top cheeseballs.
Oh, absolutely.
But
it's so good.
It's hilarious.
It's great. It's like total B-movie, like, cheesiness. Yeah. So, first thing I wrote down, my very first note of the day when watching this, God, I miss Tennant, is my first note of the day.
I know.
I really miss him. He was just, he did such a good job.
Because the episode opens and he is
screaming his head off, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, they're running into the TARDIS, and everything is going crazy. And I remember, when I was just watching, I had to go back because it's like everything, so much happens in the first 30 seconds. I have to go back and be like, I missed everything. I want to hear what he says again, because it's just, it's so good.
So good.
It takes you along with you. Like, it takes the viewer along with him.
Yeah.
You know, on that journey. And, you know, that frantic pace, and it immediately sets the scene as to why everything's happening.
Right. And I love, like, oh, just hearing the theme music again, the intro title. It's so good. It's just that unsingable theme. It is singable, but like, it's just so good. Although I never really was a fan of the orange, like, weird, whatever that shape is, that's like an eye shape logo. Like, I actually prefer the season 5 logo to that, but, like, I can't knock the music and, like, the feels that it brought back. It was just, it was so nice to be back in Doctor Who land.
It makes me want to rewatch, like, the whole, well, not the whole thing, but up to season 4. But the thing is, and this is the thing, like, it is a sad show. you enjoy.
Yeah, there are sad. There are sad parts. But for
everything
sure.
about the show is there's always an ending,
right?
To your, like, you know, a companion to the doctor,
right?
Whatever. And so even right. though the show will continue,
yeah,
what you love about the show is temporary,
right? Right. So
like all great things,
it's very like ephemeral in that sense.
Yeah.
Let's see. I wrote down
another reason because I was going through as we were watching.
Yes.
I was watching.
Oh, we were both watching myself. It, but yeah, I see
not the same time.
That's true.
And you're like, I remember enjoying this episode or these two episodes, but not like really enjoying them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out why, because I was enjoying them so much when we watched it just now. And one of the reasons is, I believe her name is Joan.
Oh, the woman who plays the love interest?
Love interest. I found her so annoying.
I still find her kind of annoying.
No, okay, I still find her annoying. But, like, I find her annoying in a different way now. At the time, I was like, okay, so Rose is number one, but, like...
I think her name is Jenny? I think her name is Jenny? Or is that... No, wait, hold up. Jenny is the mother of mine character, right?
Yeah.
Wait, yeah. I'm confused now. I don't know who she is. Oh, Lucy. Lucy.
Lucy?
Yeah. No, Lucy is mother of mine, I think.
Are you sure it's not Joan?
I don't see a Joan in the credits list. Let me double check.
Whatever.
The nurse. No, you're right. Her name is Joan. Her name is Joan. Why is the Wikipedia
I know my
article?
Ish, man.
You do know your
ish. I know
ish.
My ish.
Know
I was just ish. On IMDb.
Okay.
And I mean, I do find her annoying, and I think that's almost part of her purpose.
Yeah, there's right. Because
there are
be...
moments in the show where you're supposed to be annoyed by her.
Absolutely.
But when I was watching originally, it was really painful for me to watch Martha pine over the doctor. And I think that was one of the reasons season 3 kind of didn't hit as high a note as season 2 is because it was painful. No one wants to watch someone pine after someone they'll never have.
Right.
Even I didn't ship it, you know? Sad, you know?
Yeah, you have, we have souls and empathy. We feel bad for Martha. Yeah.
Wait, speak for yourself.
Oh, buddy. Hey. Yeah, right. So, yeah, we feel bad for Martha. And then but you said, okay, so that was annoying to you the first time you watched it.
But now, I mean, I feel like I was really enamored by, you know, watching Doctor Who again. But it was also, like, I know what happens to Martha, and she's okay. You know, like, watching her in this moment, it was really sad because she's in love with someone who'll never love her back. Mm. And that's not, like, a thing, oh, maybe he will. That's a definite thing. He's never going to love her the way that she loves him.
Yeah.
And now, you know... She doesn't get, like, a perfect ending, but she moves on from him.
She honestly probably got the best ending of of the new companions, you know?
Yeah.
Honestly. Good
That's
job, Martha.
Why,
you,
like,
you don't feel
Doctor Who, like, I just, it's hard to,
right,
it's hard to stick with it because you know everyone's coming to a tragedy.
Yeah, unless you're Martha. And even then, it's still a little tragic, right? Because she still right. probably has these feelings for the doctor. Or, you know, or at least maybe she doesn't have them anymore, but that was a huge thing that she was pining for him for a good chunk of time, right? So, yeah, this show has its weird, it's like weirdly tragic side, you know?
It does.
I said, the second note was, good old-fashioned meet cute. You know, when he runs into her on the stairs and drops the book. So I was like, oh my god, this meet cute is like too much. It's too much. Let's see. What else did I just write down? Something.
I mean, it was a really interesting choice, right? 1913 England.
It's quintessential perfect. England, and this show is quintessentially English. I mean, like, or British, whichever. They travel to Scotland and Wales sometimes on this show, so I'll say it's quintessentially, like, British. But, yeah. 1913.
It's a good moment.
It is.
Just kind of sit down, take stance of what's going on.
Don't know why the doctor would pick 1913. Or were they automatically going to 1913?
I don't know. Or was it just the TARDIS was just kind of picking a spot? Or did
Isn't there all this mumbo jumbo? I mean, it's Doctor Who, so of course it's mumbo jumbo. But isn't there all this mumbo jumbo about how the TARDIS picks, you know, specific times and days for, like, weird reasons or whatever, because the TARDIS may or may not be sentient. So, like, who knows what's going on with that?
Who knows, I mean, nothing's really going on in 1913 in England. I mean,
right.
Things will be going on. But
very soon.
Not quite yet. But I don't know. I got a mixed feelings the way that they kind of dropped in the World War One references. I think it was done really well until I think close to the end where it was just kind of ambivalicious to me.
Yeah, it got to be a little much.
Like, dude, we know. Like, you don't have to be a history buff to know what's coming.
Right. But World War One, I feel like it has so much more of a historical impact over in Europe and over in Britain than it does here in the U.S., you know? Like, that history is very... I don't know, like, we don't wear red poppies on our jackets to remember the World War One vets, right? That's a very big thing over there. We see it in the episode, Family of Blood episode, the end of the two-parter. So I think, culturally, World War One was a very bigger thing, was a much bigger thing for the Brits than for
definitely.
Us.
Definitely. I mean, like, you know, America didn't join until 1917, and they didn't have, you know, the long, protracted...
Right.
You know, the trench warfare. And also the thing about World War One is, you know, when the Americans join, they're not really fighting on their home, you know? Like,
right.
So much of Europe is just devastated.
Absolutely.
By the war. And so I think it was a really cool moment in time to stay, because obviously we have knowledge of what's coming, and, you know, some of the characters do as well, but mostly they don't. And the fact that we ended up at, you know, kind of a military school, and that, you know, the theme of young children going to war,
yeah,
it resonated really well. But I don't know, I just...
Oh yeah, that reminds me, the whole like, Are You My Mummy, the World War II episode was also Stephen Moffat, and that was also a very good episode too. Yeah,
that was a good episode.
The Empty Child, I think, is what it was called, right? Wasn't it The Empty Child?
One of them, it was.
Yeah, I can't remember the other part, what that title was.
I don't remember. It's been many years.
There were some gorgeous shots of the forest in the beginning of that episode. I can't read my notes, man. This is what happens when I try to write in the dark, and it's just a scribble. I said in the dark. I said someone effed up the shooting schedule. So I was watching with my roommate Andy, who you may have heard on our previous podcast, which was on White Flight, and we both noticed that in the beginning of the episode, right, Baines goes out to get the liquor that they've stashed in the forest. He leaves in daylight and returns at like, it's like pitch black. So it's like someone messed up the shooting schedule. The doy. It was like Children of Men, right? When they start off in the dark, and like in the course of 5 minutes, it's like freaking sunrise. Like I guess you didn't notice it, but yeah, the lighting was mad off, because it was like he went to go get alcohol. It should have taken him like 20 minutes. Instead, it took him like 5 hours. The lighting was off. We both noticed.
I guess I was just.
It wasn't really important to the story.
It was just more like the timing was off. Because, like, he leaves and
it's in the afternoon, and then he gets...
How do we know it's in the afternoon?
Because of the light?
Couldn't it be, like, really close to, like...
Nah, they would have done the... They would have done the lighting differently if it was around sunset.
Okay. I mean...
But anyway, it was just us...
It doesn't matter.
It's just me and Andy nitpicking, because we're very, like, visually oriented and just, like, production. So that's us just being, you know, like, nitpicky. I love, like, anytime we get, like, a close-up on a character who's possessed by someone in the family of blood. Like, well, yeah, they do the weird head tilt and the weird crazy eyes, but, like, what's really great is there's always, like, a weird angle on their face. Like, it's an extra wide angle, which makes their faces look very strange. And it's usually, I think I noticed, like, the camera's kind of tilted at an angle as well anytime we were on their faces. So it was a really nice, effective, like, cinematic choice to, like, make them look very strange and alien and scary, to indicate to us, viewer, yeah, that, you know, they're possessed or whatever. God, do I love Baines in this episode. He, and the second episode, too. Like, Baines is great. He is a campy, cheesy as F character, but I eat it up. It is wonderful.
Tom Riddle.
He has a very Tom Riddle, Norman Bates from Psycho-esque kind of look to him with the dark hair and the dark eyes and dark eyebrows. And yeah. Kind of
like the aura as well. Just like this.
Oh, it's great.
Creepiness.
It's great. I love it. And
the haircut, probably.
Yeah, so this man is currently 33 years old, which is crazy to me. I feel super old now. He's 33, and he is the great, great, great grandson of Charles Dickens.
What? You just blew my mind.
Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't matter, and you know everything is pointless. But like, that's crazy.
Baines is the actor who played Baines is related to Charles Dickens. He was also in
England. Is so weird.
They are so weird, and he was also in Game of Thrones. As was the other kid. You know the kid who played Tim Latimer? The one who stole the stopwatch and his ESP powers? He was also in Game of Thrones, which I did not know.
I didn't know he was in Game of Thrones. He's in like a bajillion other things, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's the Love Actually.
He is 26, but he still looks like a child. It's a little disturbing. It's a little disturbing, actually, how childish he looks. When he played this character, he looks like he's 11.
I know.
It's crazy.
I mean, look, kid, I understand that feel, you know?
Kid like me, kid, or like kid like him, kid?
No, kid like him. I'm talking to him because he's listening. Kid, I get it. Like, I'm in my 20s, man. And you look at a picture of me when I was literally 12, and I look exactly the same. Exactly. Like, you could take a picture of me from when I was 12, and you could just put it up to me right now. Years, over a decade later. And you could barely tell the difference.
That's so funny.
I mean, obviously, like, my makeup's upgraded and my wardrobe's upgraded.
And you're clearly
like,
an older person.
My face is the same.
I mean, it's not really something to complain about, right? Because you're, like, youthful looking, so that's good.
That's what everyone tells me.
Oh, but it has its problems for...
Well, when I get mistaken as, like, a high school student, like, I'm a little offended. I mean, maybe one day I won't be, but, like, dude.
Well, when you're 80 and everyone else is 80 and you look around and you look like you're 60, that'll be a good time.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think it's going to work like that. I'm just going to jump from, like, looking 12 to looking, like, 50.
Aww.
But let's move on from my sad life.
Anyway, but that kid who plays Tim Latimer, he still looks like a child, and it's a little disconcerting. A bunch of these people in this episode of Doctor Who also had cameos in, like, the new Star Wars movies, whether it was, like, The Force Awakens, or I don't know if Rogue One? I don't know if they were in Rogue One.
Rogue? But... Did you just say
I'm thinking about Rugaroos.
Oh, yeah, Rogue One.
Shut up. Anyway, so Rogue One. And I mean, you may have seen Freema Agamon in a... our good friend Freema, she was in Sense8 as... what's her face? Almanita. And
she was in The Force Awakens.
She had a cameo, right? When it zooms in on her face when the world's exploding and it's like, what?
She's there for like a split second, but I saw her and I recognized her. I'm like,
it was good.
I know you. Your face is familiar to my face.
I haven't heard you say that line in a long time. Your face is familiar to my face. You used to say that all the time. Anyway. So like... The British acting world's a weird place. You kind of tend to see the same people over and over again, especially if they're
like
good.
Joan is in Harry Potter.
Right, right.
As Mafalda Hopkirk.
Oh, yeah, it's like a super random thing, right? It's like a one-off character.
Yeah, it's a very, very small role, but, you know, she's there.
Yeah.
That's how it works. And obviously David Tennant is in Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah, and
it's
crazy.
Sometimes he does, like, crazy look, and I'm like, hello, Barty Crouch Jr.
Oh, man. Should that be your title? Hello, Barty Crouch. I had a good...
Junior. Barty Crouch is a different character.
That's right. He kills the senior, right?
Spoiler alert, Maggie.
It's Doctor Who.
13 years ago.
Also, I can't... My roommate came up with a great episode title, and we will get to it later. I don't know. Maybe we'll put it... Well, maybe we'll put that up in the air to title the show. But anyway, I talked about the weird angles on the Family of Blood characters. I really can't read my handwriting. I got it. Doctor in Screens. So, this episode, and then Blink was not a one. Blink was a one-parter, right? It was not a two-parter. Yes. So there's this two-parter, and then after this two-parter is the very famous episode Blink. And I've noticed a trend in this episode, and this two-parter rather, and in the next episode, the Doctor appearing on screens. Because Blink, the Doctor is like communicating with everyone through that screen, right? That TV screen.
Yeah.
And then again, we get this, that kind of thing again in this episode, wherein Martha, he's left instructions for Martha, and she's frustrated because he says nothing about what happens if he falls in love with a human who isn't her. Sorry. Oh my god.
That is just so
sad. You know, I remember that line. I remember when she's like, you had to go and fall in love with a human. And then, there's that pause. And then I completed it for her because I was watching it for, the second or third time. Yeah. I was like, that wasn't me. And then she says it. And I was like, me and my roommate just cracked up. But
that's sad.
It is sad. But it's also, I remembered it, too. Because it was such a, big thing. A big part of her character.
Lots of screens.
The doctor in the screens. I'm just kind of going through my notes, and I know if you want to jump in.
The thing is that, I mean,
isn't that so Doctor Who though? That he doesn't even think about the ramifications of falling in love.
It is so him.
It's so him.
Because, and I think, but here's the thing. This is me being a fangirl. I understood, but I think he was in love with Rose, and I feel like.
But did he even understand that? I mean, in a way, I guess.
I don't know. I don't know if he would understand it in the way that we understand it, but I think in the way that he treated her, you could clearly see that he had strong feelings for her.
Yeah.
But I don't know. When I watch this episode as a fangirl and as a Rose Doctor shipper, I just think of it as he wouldn't even conceive of falling in love again because he's still in love with Rose. but that's just me, yeah. Obviously. You know, that's just one interpretation because I'm a shipper.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a very, you'd be crazy to not ship Doctor and Rose, honestly. Yeah, it's a classic ship. Poor Martha.
I love it so much. Poor Martha.
Poor Martha.
But the thing is, I say that a lot. I have these weird tics. The thing is, anyway.
It's fine.
That's another one.
We all have verbal tics. Mine is,
but. Psh.
I hate you.
I know, right? Let's see. So, the Doctor, becomes human. And, it's that moment of, there's a few moments in the show where you're like, oh my goodness, is he human? Is he a Time Lord?
Mm-hmm.
When Joan, the nurse, is checking for his second heart.
Right.
And when he's being chased by the family blood, on multiple occasions, you're like, well, is he a doctor or is he John Smith? And I really like how that episode was played because it, in some ways, it feels like a Jekyll and Hyde situation.
Yeah.
One body, two personalities, very different.
Right.
I like that he wasn't just himself, but human.
Right, he was completely different. Regular human.
Regular.
Right, with human aspirations and goals and dreams and such. Well, maybe not human dreams, because he was dreaming about his previous life, but whatevs.
No, but dreams for the future.
Right, he was like, I want to get married to Joan and have children and die and grow old and blah.
That moment of where they flash forward to the future they could have shared is so sad.
It's sad, but I also just want to see the Doctor be the Doctor, so I don't really give a let me censor myself.
It's hard because as a viewer, the whole time I'm watching this episode, I just want the Doctor back,
Because right.
When the Doctor's not there, bad things happen. People die, and John Smith is incompetent and impossible and not why I signed up for
he's
the show.
He's a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of a jerk. He's, willing he's to send evil. Children to, war. Dude, the heck is wrong with you?
And it's, when the Doctor is, deciding to become human, we obviously don't get all of the instructions that he leaves for Martha, but just the way that he acts as John Smith, he can't have foreseen it. Not just the
love. No, not at all.
But just the buffoonery and the selfishness and
the human aspects.
But he must have seen it a little bit, because he tells Martha, don't let me, you know, leave you behind, or right. Don't let me abandon you.
Right.
So he must have some idea. And I think he you know, he's aware of the darker sides of his own personality.
For sure.
But I think, you know, the things that came out in John Smith are different than the ones that we usually see.
Yeah.
At least with this doctor.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a nice exploration of his character, I think.
Yeah. I liked, I can't remember quite the moment, because I just wrote it down because Andy found it kind of striking, but there was a nice cut from, you know, when that girl with the balloon is, like, kind of skipping, and then she gets kind of, like, abducted by the scarecrow, and then it cuts to another thing. That cut was something that stood up for Andy, so I wrote it down. It was a nice cut, like, to a, like, a straw field. You cut from, I think it cut from the scarecrow to a straw field, which was a nice kind of, I don't know if it was a jump cut, but it was a nice cut. And then, again, I wrote gorgeous English countryside. There was a scene where it was very obviously green screened in because the lighting was super messed up. I think it's when John Smith and the nurse are trying to fix the scarecrow. It's mainly just John Smith trying to fix that scarecrow. It's very, very obvious in certain shots that that they shot it in front of a green screen because the lighting is all messed up. It's so bad.
It's funny because, like, I just don't even notice stuff like that. Like,
I sometimes, just... sometimes if it's like really negligible or really small, I don't notice it. But like, it was real bad. Me and Andy were like, "What the heck is going on with these lights?"
I mean, it has to be egregious.
It was pretty. For me to notice it. Yeah.
Well, whatever it was, I didn't notice it. But you know what I did notice?
What?
Racism.
Yeah.
How about
that
transition, though?
How about that transition? All right, let's talk about it. Race. So this was 1913. So people
I'm
were...
I'm so impressed with my transition. I'm
sorry. It was a very eloquent, graceful transition, obviously. Race! yes. So Martha is a POC. She's a woman of color. Generally, we don't get too much racism against her on this show. I mean, I think it's even been alluded to in previous episodes where she's like, won't they be weird about me, you know, looking like this or my background? And the doctor's like, it doesn't really matter. You can kind of just, like, fake it till you make it. The Bavarian fire drill, I believe, is the trope name for this, where it's like, you act like you're totally in control and people just go, that person looks like they have their ish together. I guess everything's fine. So I feel like she asked him about race or, you know, like in the Shakespeare. I think in the Shakespeare episode she asked him about it. She's like, well, like, isn't it going to be weird because, you know, like, I don't know if she said, like, I'm black, but, you know, that's basically what she was saying. And he's like, nah, just, like, walk like you have a lot of confidence and, like, own it and you'll be fine. But, like, that didn't really, like, that was not something she could do in this situation. She was a servant, and it was bad. The racism in this episode, I mean, it wasn't horrible, but it was very uncomfortable to watch.
The thing is, and before I started watching, I remember having conversations with you about that. I'm like, well, how can there be a companion who is a person of color, you know, traveling throughout history? You know, some periods they'll be fine and nobody will blink an eye, and some periods will be kind of not chill about
it. Right.
And you know, you tell me what the doctor says is like, fake it till you make it. You walk like you're fine and everyone will treat you that way. And to me, it feels kind of like a cop out because they don't want to deal with race every episode.
Sure, but I also appreciate, because I wouldn't want to watch Doctor Who if they made it about race every episode.
No, definitely not.
You know? Yeah.
No. Okay, so like right now I am watching a show, the thing I've referenced before, called Timeless, which is currently airing on NBC. And you should watch it. Actually, no. If you want to, you can watch it. But that was very... Never mind.
Okay.
I have mixed feelings about it that I don't want to get into.
Okay. Is it sci-fi?
It's sci-fi. It's time travel.
Is there a POC in it?
That's what I'm getting at.
Oh, we should cover the show. Or maybe at least the beginning episodes or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
We have a void in our schedule, so we have to fill that void. Just saying.
I am the void. I don't know why I said that. And Anyway, so it's timeless and it's time travel, and one of the characters is a black man, and they're going back in time, you know, to different periods in American history, only American history.
Okay.
And they reference his race and the way he's treated a lot. Mm-hmm. Not like a lot, like it's not like a huge
over
thing, but it's something that's it continues to be mentioned.
Right.
And it's not like it's like a huge factor of the show, but it is present.
Right.
And I think that would have been better, I think, for Martha.
Right.
It's not that it has to be a huge issue. And I like that, in this episode, I like that they tackled it. And obviously, not every point in time people are going to care. Like,
right.
Really back in, Roman times, I don't think anyone really gives a crapiola.
Yeah.
But there are moments where I don't think fake it till you make it is going to work. As
right.
Well. And I mean...
I get kind of like that the scope of the show is not to focus on those kinds of issues, though. So they're, and I think it would have been a better show if they had focused on those things. But yeah,
it'd be a different show.
It'd be a different show.
Yeah. I don't know if it'd be better or worse, but
right.
But it's not just the race thing, right?
Right.
It's also the gender thing. It's the kind of deal, you know. The women on the show get away with a lot of stuff
that they probably wouldn't have. Been able to get away with.
Just scandalized people.
Right.
But historical accuracy isn't exactly the key. exactly what Doctor Who is about.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It's
but
just fun sci-fi. with a dash of tragedy.
I'm a history kind of nerd, you know? It's like, if you want somebody to be nitpicking the history issues, it's going to be me.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be me.
It's only January 27th. Dear Lord. Anyway.
But yeah, back to race.
Race.
Well, it's interesting. I'm sorry. I threw it back to you and then I picked it up again.
Okay.
But okay. It's interesting, you know, being an American watching the way that race interacts with class. Obviously, there's a similar interaction in America, but it is different than the way it happens in the UK. The way that, the nurse character and some of the other characters treat Martha, but also treat Martha's friend.
Right.
The other servant, which it doesn't, I feel like that isn't quite the interaction that you would have if something similar took place in America.
Right. Absolutely. And yeah, they always go back to this is not how things are done in the city, or whatever it was that her friend Jenny or whoever says to her. And yeah, it's just a different interaction. I mean, I live for the moments where Martha just totally owns everything and is these are the bones in the hand, and also shut the F up. And I just those are great when she was able to finally be like, I'm not taking this ish anymore from you guys. Heck to the
it
no.
Was so
I'm out of
to watch,
it was great.
You know?
It was great. But yeah, and it's just, you know, just seeing all these people try to police her, you know, control your servant and this and that and the other to John Smith was just awful and gross. Not him. I mean, seeing other people be awful and gross about who Martha was, especially kind of in reference to who she was to John Smith. She's your servant. You need to control her and ish. Class is definitely has a different class in the UK is very different from class here. I think it seems to be. It's I don't know if it's worse or better. It just seems more ingrained in. I don't know. It just seems more ingrained into the culture.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in America, there's this idea that if the classes don't really exist and that they're completely
That's
valuable.
A lie.
It is completely a lie. possibly now more than ever, though that is probably up for debate. But
there is the whole American dream, rising above your station, all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about. Why are you... Oh, does he say rising above my station? Is that a thing he says?
Yes.
Oh, whoops. I guess I'm subconsciously quoting Hamilton now. That's pretty bad. But no, but like that is the ultimate American dream, right? The American dream is that you can
even if it's
you can break out of your current class and go higher by doing X, lower. Y, and Z, or going lower, right? That's like the tragedy of the American dream is like when you actually do all this stuff and you actually end up in a worse place.
Well, it's the fact that, you know, you'll end up where you deserve. It's that very...
Right.
It's a really important part of, like, merit takes you to the finish line, right?
And America's all about quote-unquote merit, apparently. I mean, allegedly.
Obviously
not true.
Obviously not true, right. You know? But it's...
We like to think of ourselves of like that. Narrative. Right. That we are a merit-based society.
So we don't really talk about class as much in that ingrained way. The way that they do in Britain,
right? It feels like in the U.S. class and like its connection to merit is like, yeah, like you deserve it, you earned it, you worked hard for it. Versus class in the U.K. seems to be more like you're inheriting it, you're born into it, kind of a deal, right? At least that's the connection I get. So, you know, they have kings and queens, and you're born into it, and you know, you marry this person, and etc. Some other nice things, there were some really great tracking shots. I love Bane's crazy smirk. I live for it. And then all the other family of blood members do that crazy smirk. It's just so good. It's just so good.
It really is.
Walt.
It really is.
I said,
and you know,
yeah.
It's funny. Because sometimes when you rewatch something years later, you'll remember things.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll remember misconceptions, like the same misconceptions you had when you were watching. It's like, I was watching, and I'm like, I know some of these kids, or, you know, one of these kids becomes, you know, this evil guy, right?
Right.
I could not remember who it was.
How do you forget?
I couldn't remember if it was Baines or the leader. The
like the bully or whatever?
Yeah, the guy who's like, go get the beer.
Right.
And like, you know, obviously that's a short scene, so it's not like it was confused for long, but I was still thinking that, and I still kept thinking, oh, that bully is gonna be the bad guy, but he wasn't, and he's not even an important part of the show.
I mean, it's a weird, I don't know if it's really a comeuppance, but you know, the fact that Latimer saves his butt from that bomb or whatever in the later war scene was supposed to be some kind of weird comeuppance, not really a thing. It was strange.
It seems like by that point that it's already far behind them.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're friends or whatever.
Or whatever.
But
right.
Just the interaction of, you know, British schoolboys at war, it's so...
The interaction between British schoolboys in general is just super weird to me. Like, I remember reading some of Roald Dahl's stuff, and just, like, he's written about his experiences as a school kid at a boarding school, and I was like, these guys are, like, really messed up to each other. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, it's a really strange...
But I guess that's kind of what happens when you send boys to live by themselves and go to school and their parents aren't there to discipline them. They just get all up into wild shenanigans, like, you know... Again, I'd say what happened in Roald Dahl's stories or autobiographies were a lot crazier and worse than what we saw happen in this Doctor Who episode. But in any case... I really miss Russell T. Davies' writing style. Ah! What'd you just drop? A coin or something?
I'm playing with my necklace and I'm just...
Oh, it was just really loud. That's why I kind of made a weird yelp. But anyway, I really miss RTD's writing. Again, we talked about how, like, he's kind of, like, he injects, like, the heart into the show. Plus, you know, David Tennant's acting, too. And I think one thing I was pointing out to Andy when we were watching was, like, I think what's missing in Stephen Moffat's writing is, like, that element of family is missing a lot of the time, where Russell T. Davies often kind of made family an important part of story arcs. It was very much not important or non-essential to the Stephen Moffat arcs, in my experience. Like, Amy Pond didn't even have a family. Like, they were disappeared from the story. But family's a huge thing for the other companions, right? So we get Rose, we meet Rose's mother and Rose's boyfriend. We meet Donna's family, especially her grandfather, becomes more important by that finale.
We see
Martha's family too. We don't really get any of Amy's family, or I guess Rory's family. We get
Rory
a little,
was
but
dropped
like,
into a ditch as a child. Found, and he did not exist until he met.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was just awfully one-dimensional. And I was just saying, like Rory is like a worse version of Mickey, honestly, and that's saying a lot.
Whoa.
Mickey's a, it's
Those
true.
Are fighting words.
No, am I wrong though? I don't think I'm wrong.
Look, I am not. I'm not a fan of Amy and Rory, honestly. So I'm not going to argue with you because I completely agree.
He's like, okay,
but
Mickey's
I, there
already
are some people who would.
Mickey kind of got, pardon my verbiage, but Mickey kind of got shafted because, like, it's like, how do you compare? How does your ordinary boyfriend compare to a time traveling alien who can bring you on adventures? Like, there's no way you're gonna win. And so poor Mickey has, like, you know, he's trying to compete against this guy. There's no way he's gonna win. But then,
not.
And then the that same was... thing happens with Rory, except Rory's even somehow more pathetic than Mickey is. Somehow, I mean, he does have his moments. But, like, overall, I just felt like Rory was, like, a like was like even worse off than Mickey, character-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The way that they were playing it to be different is that Amy stayed in love with Rory and that they were...
Did
you know,
she,
married,
though?
And
did
that they
she?
Were going on adventures and they
did
were a couple,
she?
Blah, blah, blah.
I don't know if I ever completely I bought that, honestly.
It's exactly true. She was more obsessed with the doctor than she was in love with Rory.
It's just that's why it makes it even more sad, because at least Rose kind of liked Mickey. I mean, I really don't know if I could say the same thing about Amy. Like, she's just like, he's just
the
there.
The character of Amy was supposed to love Rory, and I think we're supposed to understand and buy that just as viewers. That said, I don't think the show ever conveyed it in a way that I believed it.
Right, yeah.
Is that fair?
I agree with that.
It's not. It wasn't sold to us as Amy having an affair with the doctor and Rory watching. It was just, it just happened that way.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like that. I think maybe the acting contributed to that, you know? Like, maybe just Karen Gillan was just, I don't know. I just don't.
I wouldn't blame
I
the acting
was.
Personally.
You think it was more
the writing?
Yeah,
I
just. I
think it never properly.
Moffitt!
The relationship between. Ugh. Rory and Amy as to really why they loved each other and why she, I mean, they played with that a little bit of like her having to choose between them, but
never fully bought it. It was just ugh.
No.
Anyway, stop talking about Amy and to get back on track with this episode that we're talking about. I liked the way the scarecrows moved. It was very
was
effective
really
and scary and horror-esque.
I think the scariest moment of the show was when the father of mine, you know, before he became father of mine, you know, was looking at the scarecrow and he's like, you know, he thinks someone's playing around and then all the scarecrows surround him. And
yeah.
It's
pretty terrifying.
Very much as horror and it works really well.
Yeah.
I
wrote down, where is the wind coming from? Because there's one of those great scenes where everyone's indoors, yet somehow everyone's hair is moving back and forth like there's a great wind blowing in the distance. So I was like, where is this wind coming from? The title that Andy dropped that I thought was pretty funny was 10K Moonlight, in reference to the type of lighting in this show. I think 10K is the temperature of the lighting. And I think we were talking about how, like, the moonlight was way too bright in that scene, so he said, what is this 10K moonlight? And I was like, that's a pretty good episode title, 10K moonlight. I wrote down...
You and your film types.
That's all Andy, man. He's a videographer. I wrote down 5 stages of grief that he goes through with, you know, when John Smith it needs to be destroyed in order for the doctor to come back, right? So let me look this up. 5 stages of grief.
Is it really that important, Maggie?
I don't know. I thought he was. Did you not feel like he was grieving when he was
no,
making that choice?
I feel like he was grieving. I just. Why did you have to Google it?
I didn't. I Wikipedia'd it. It's okay.
Oh, I'm
so,
sorry. That's completely different.
So the 5 stages of grief are 1, denial, which we saw very much in. He was denying that the doctor was a person, a real person. 2, anger. Yes, he was. Okay, yeah, we got that. 3, bargaining. Yep, we got the bargaining because he was like, oh, maybe if we give the family of blood the thing. And they're like, you idiot, we can't do that. We're going to destroy the world if we give him the stop, if we give him the watch. 4, depression. I mean, that's the 10th doctor the whole time, right? Yep. And then 5, acceptance. I don't know if we ever got acceptance. That was off screen. But
it was off screen.
Yeah.
Because they wanted that moment of surprise where they didn't know. If you're not supposed to know
mm-hmm.
whether he's human or a Time Lord when he confronts them at the end, which is a good play.
I liked it. I liked it.
And the way that he's fumbling around and hitting the switches is
LOL. Classic
That's
10.
A classic Doctor thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
So good. This episode had a lot of classic moments. So even though, you know, it's not... The doctor wasn't the doctor, you know,
right.
But there were just so many fantastic moments. They didn't do the Doctor Who thing, you know?
They did do the Doctor Who thing, didn't they? Oh, no, I guess they didn't. I watched the comedy sketch with Catherine Tate after, so I'm getting that mixed up. But, yeah. I guess they didn't do the Doctor Who thing. No, they didn't. It would have been funny if they did, but they didn't.
I think they probably do it too much, honestly.
They definitely do it too much. So, I actually kind of...
You know what I love?
What? What did you love?
I love all of the times that Martha rushes in, and they're just like, you have to knock, and she runs back to the door. that frustrated look, and she goes and knocks on the door,
it's
and then
great.
Rushes back.
It's so wonderful.
I mean, it's funny, but it's sad, but it's funny.
Yeah. I actually kind of, towards the end, I think I liked or had more sympathy for Joan, the nurse. And, you know, she gave him that speech about how, we talked about it earlier, right? Like, if you hadn't come here, would people have died? And, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, how the doctor comes back to that cottage and talks to Joan and then leaves. And he keeps just driving, the doctor keeps driving the knife in further and further about how John Smith is never coming back. And I was like, just stop tormenting the poor woman. Just leave her alone. Say, I'm sorry this had to happen. I have to go now. Bye. He just made it so much more painful for that poor woman.
But the thing is, and I'm not sure if I got it the first time around, but the way that I read it the second time around was that he was giving her a way to say goodbye to John Smith.
Oh, like closure and stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, like, he has his nice moments. He's a little oblivious as 10, but you know, he has his nice moments, but this is his way of showing that John Smith is gone. He's
right.
never coming back, and you know, by acting very differently than, you know, the way that John Smith acted, it was him, you know, kind of really cutting off their relationship.
Right.
He does offer that, you know, to take her with her, but
that's when for me I was like, Doctor, she, like, would hate to go anywhere with Martha. Like, don't drive the knife in any deeper. She clearly has a lot of hatred for Martha. Like, let it go, dude. Let it go.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if she had to travel with Martha? Then she'd have to actually, like, admit to herself that black people are people. Like, seriously. I was like, it's not gonna work. That's not gonna work.
you just imagine, and I think that this is another issue, but a non-issue about Doctor Who, is that, you know, many of the companions are from our day, right? And that's great to make, you know, us
comfortable
and accepted by the show, and, you know, they are our window into his crazy world,
right.
whatever.
Right.
But logistically, it doesn't really make sense that he would keep choosing humans from the same time.
Maybe it's a thing for our time period.
Maybe.
Probably not.
But the show would be very interesting if they did do people like Joan. People who, you know, would watch. You'd have to have their preconceived notions.
Right. They're politically incorrect or whatever notions that we don't accept now. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I love Doctor Who. Maybe not now, but I used to. And what it was good. It worked.
Yeah. It was a balancing act, but it was a glorious balancing act.
And, you know, like, all the whenever I have suggestions, this is just me as a writer in a nutshell, all of my suggestions are almost always really dark. I sit down and I'm like, I have this really funny idea. I'm going to write a comedy story. And all of a sudden, it's so dramatic. I just can't write comedy. It's always, I always take a comedic situation and take it to the
darkest possible timeline.
Dramatic. Yeah, exactly. Most dramatic thing I can do to it. And that's just me. And so, like, when I say, oh, it should be like this or it should be like that, just keep that in mind, you know? Like, I don't run a show. Maybe I should, but it wouldn't. I don't think I could do the comedy thing as well.
Right, right. You'd be more drama kind of a show.
I'd be more drama, and that's good, but maybe not for Doctor Who.
Yeah. And but I
don't know, because there's a difference between being aware of it and dropping, like, hints, and then also dropping anvils. And maybe I'm just aware that when Doctor Who wants to make a statement,
it will drop all the anvils. Yeah.
Like, we know World War I's coming. Calm yourself.
And then we get the Empty Child episode, right? And I think that my last note was, I love the TARDIS sound effect. Like, that crazy kind of sound. Like, I love it. I love it. It was such a long time since I've heard it, and it was just, it was so good. One thing I did, me and Andy were both saying, was if he had given Martha the stopwatch or the watch, none of this would have happened. But of course, that means the episode wouldn't have happened, and that's no fun. So
I know, right? I wonder why he didn't.
Because he wanted to go on an adventure in his human body.
Sometimes I wonder if he has adventure on the mind instead of practicality.
Yeah,
but, you know, whatever.
He
doesn't even put it in a place that's important, and someone just, like, nicks it.
Yeah, and dude. If you left it with Martha, you would have been fine. But instead, you have to leave it on your freaking mantle or something.
How stupid. What's the kid's name? Timothy?
I know his last name is Latimer.
Or... let's just call him Latimer, then. Latimer.
Tim Latimer, yeah.
Tim. Yeah. He.
And Tim is, he has his weird ESP powers that are never explained, but whatever.
Yes. That is another thing that drove me crazy. I thought that was going to be, like, important. And he just, he has a...
weird ESP thing.
A sense.
He has a weird ESP
thing.
Of
the universe that he just... why was that in there? What was important about that?
Well, he wouldn't have been the one to choose it and do all the good things, because they had to lose the watch, but they had to make sure it would fall in the right hands. So therefore, we have to come up with a good character that somehow has ESP for, like, no good reason.
But, like, here's the thing. If Martha had the watch, or he had never stolen the watch, the Doctor just would have become the Doctor much sooner, and most of the problems would be gone.
Right.
Right? Because he would have just... killed them faster?
Who would have killed who faster?
The Doctor would have just solved the problem.
Because he doesn't kill them, right? The whole thing is he makes sure they will stay alive forever. Because he's a cruel, horrible...
one of the darkest things that he does. And that's saying something.
Yeah, the Doctor's super effed up. I love it.
I mean, it really... I feel like so much of Ten's time as the Doctor was... taking him from this innocent little flower who quotes the Lion King to invading aliens. And then he just suffers and suffers and suffers.
And then becomes Jesus somehow.
Whatever. I don't care about Jesus.
That's true.
He suffers. And then, you know, this darkness comes out and you see little peaks of it. And I just love when a show knows where it's going. And you can see this teasing of how dark Ten will become, and how, you know, it shows how much he was kind of hurt by the whole situation, because he's usually a pretty compassionate
person,
dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but instead of
compassion,
you know, killing them or, you know, just getting rid of them, he tortures them all for eternity.
Eternal agony. Yeah. He just turned into a scarecrow, but I don't think he was, like, eternally tormented. And then so-and-so was trapped in a mirror.
Do you want to be, like, a scarecrow?
No, I don't want to be a scarecrow I don't want to be an eternal scarecrow or eternally trapped in mirrors or any of that junk. But I feel like the mother got it the worst, right? Like, didn't she, like, black hole? Like, who wants to fall into a black hole? Oh, speaking of, I thought it was kind of, this is more, like, this is, like, not a super serious critique, but, like, I thought it was interesting how the Family of Blood just happened to fall under, Earth's primary gender roles, like, what are the likelihood, what are the odds of an alien species also having a father, mother, brother, and sister type social role? That
occurred to me.
Yeah, I mean, well, it wasn't something I thought about previously, but just thinking about it now, I was like, that seems very convenient. Anyway.
And the bodies that they chose would match their roles.
Yeah, I was like, okay, y'all.
So, you know, the daughter chooses a little girl, and et cetera, et cetera.
Right, I was like, I know this is a much more of an overarching problem with sci-fi, is that people kind of lack imagination when it comes to those types of things, like gender roles and things like that. Because, like, Star Trek falls into the same category. It's like, why are there always, like, one male and one female type of alien? Like, you can't have multiple genders. Like, you would think that would be more of a thing with alien cultures. But anyway, I digress. So, this is just such a good two-parter.
It really is.
I love rewatching it.
It's not my favorite.
It's not my favorite.
But
it's good. It's a good one.
It's good because I finish it and it makes me feel nostalgic and happy and also a little melancholy. I think that's a great way to finish an episode, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of my favorite episodes, both for Doctor Who and for other shows, there are a lot of times, like, really dark episodes that I really enjoyed watching at the time, but never want to go back and rewatch because I will be sad.
Right.
Like, what am I supposed to do? Put in one of the two-parter where 9 dies? Like, no, I'm not.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like a lot of the more poignant episodes of, like, these sci-fi shows are when so-and-so travels back in... so-and-so travels back in time and they fall in love with, like, a woman from that time period, and then obviously that always ends tragically. That's like one of the classics.
It's a classic.
One of those classic Star Trek episodes is, you know, Kirk travels back in time with someone else, falls in love, but they can't bring her back with them, you know? They have to leave her. And so it's a similar type of situation here where a time traveler falls in love with someone from that time period, but they have to leave them. So it's a classic, but it's a classic for a reason.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
That reminds me of the Twilight Zone episode, which is, oh my gosh, extremely tragic. I'll give you a very brief summary, and including the spoiler. But basically, there's a couple who fall in love, and the guy is about to go on this major space voyage, and he is about to be, like, frozen.
This is gonna be so sad.
Yeah, so, like, because it's, like, a 20-year journey, right?
Right.
And so, like, he's gonna go, and he's gonna do, and he's gonna come back, and he's gonna be, you know, frozen for the voyage so he doesn't have to, like, you know, be 20 years alone on a spaceship or whatever. And so, you know, he's leaving the love of his life, and, you know, by the time that he comes back, he'll be young and she'll be old, obviously. So, when he goes on this trip, you find out the kicker at the end is that he aged. He spent all the time alone on a spaceship so he could come back and be the same age as his love.
And she went
into, like, a frozen state. And so she's young.
It's like Gift of the Magi.
It's painful. Twilight Zone is so good, man.
Oh, that's so... My heart hurts, dude. My heart, it hurts. That's so sad.
I can't remember what the episode's called. But there are these, you know, these tropes of sci-fi. And, God, they're sad, man. Why do I like sci-fi?
Because it reflects the current time period. It kind of shows our hopes and aspirations. Morrow. The Long Morrow? Are you being poetic? Like, I'm confused.
No, The Long Morrow, I think, is the episode title. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure.
You're looking it up? Yeah.
I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure.
That's so sad.
I'm kind of a genius when it comes to remembering Twilight Zone episode titles. Yep.
The Long Morrow. That's so sad.
Yeah, it really is.
If only they had communicated better, then none of this would have happened.
That's the key. That is exactly the key in so many situations.
Even if only they had communicated better.
It happens so often.
Yeah.
In shows.
And in real life. Well,
yeah. But even in this episode, like, if the doctor communicated better with Martha, or any of his companions, do you think so much bad crap would happen?
Nope. No. Nope.
And part of it, I think, is that, you know,
he's an alien. He's, right. Yeah, he doesn't understand.
But I feel like his experience with John Smith, it should help him, you know?
Well, does he remember his experience with John Smith?
I feel like he does.
You feel like he does? We never get a concrete answer to yes or no about that, but yeah. Poor Martha. Sorry, I just feel bad for Martha. I know it ends up working out for her. She ends up being fine, but poor Martha.
It's still sad at the time, yeah. You know? But, you know, she does get to go on adventures, and she does end up pretty good as far as companions go.
Yeah, it's not like she got, you know, stalked and killed by a statue.
Classic.
Right?
I hate when that happens. It's so awkward.
Anyway, just for all our listeners out there, if you're interested in watching more Doctor Who, one of my favorite episodes of all time is season 4, episode called Midnight. It is very much a bottle episode. It's very much a Twilight Zone-esque episode, but I love it with all my heart. Features the 10th Doctor, and it's just so good. I love it. It is kind of a dark episode, though, so, like, just know that if you're looking for some light, nice, fluffy Doctor Who, that is not an episode that would give you that at all. But I love Midnight. It's probably my favorite episode of all time for Doctor Who. What about you, Melissa? Do you have a favorite Doctor Who episode?
Well, or two-parter? I have to say, I'm not a big fan of Midnight.
Oh, okay.
I'm not, like...
I mean, I can kind of see there are better episodes, but
I'm not, like, saying it that way. Just, like, to me, it was very much, like, a Twilight Zone-esque episode. I would rather sit down and watch Twilight Zone.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I'm not, like, you can have your opinion. I'm not saying you can't. Sure. Like, that's fine. I'm trying to think of my favorite Doctor Who episode. I loved the end of season 4, where it was the culmination of everything that had come before it. All of the old gang got
comes
together,
back, yeah.
And
but that's not something you can really watch standalone.
No. That's just my favorite. I'm getting to that.
Yeah.
And what makes that episode so awesome is that it builds up with everything that has come before it. So
absolutely.
You can't just start with those episodes, obviously.
Yeah.
But if someone is saying, maybe I should get into Doctor Who, do you know where I would start?
I do not.
Episode 1.
Oh, Rose.
It's
a classic.
It used to be
free on iTunes. I don't think it is anymore. But it used to be free on iTunes for like a couple of years.
I remember when I had to watch Doctor Who, that was back when I had Amazon Prime.
Mm.
So I know it was on Prime back then. Probably isn't. I know it's not on Netflix. I did check.
That is a good, yeah. Rose is a good episode. Yeah.
I think it's a good episode because, and it's been a long time since I've seen it, too. But it introduces Rose. It introduces the 9th Doctor, who
you love.
So good. He's snarky and hilarious. And a little mean, but in a good way.
That's why you love him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He...
I mean, the 11th Doctor is my Doctor because he's the one I started off with first. And he's just so weird and weird-looking and wacky. Like, he's a little more wacky than I think 10 is. And he's just so awkward, but I love it. It's just, I don't know, it works for me. But I don't know anyone who doesn't like the 10th Doctor. Like, I think general consensus is that he's one of the best Doctors. Iterations of the Doctor.
Good.
Yeah, he's just so,
He's so good. And,
anyway,
it really is.
This is the David Tennant podcast, y'all. Like,
we're just gonna talk about how awesome David Tennant is for the rest of our lives.
Except for when he's wearing a rat tail. Oh God, that's when David Tennant is like, no, goodbye, dude. He actually legit had a rat tail haircut.
When?
Back in 2014, at least. It was really bad, dude. It was like,
we'll put a picture
awful
in the show notes.
I'm gonna go find one right now. David Tennant.
I have not seen that before. And honestly,
tail.
I don't think I want to.
It's pretty unattractive. That's why I was horrified when I saw it. I thought it was a joke, but no, he actually did have his hair like that for a little bit. David Tennant rat tail. Oh, there it is. It's so ugly. Or is it just a really bad ponytail? I don't know. But you know either way, it's really bad.
I'm sorry. But you know what I really like about these episodes is that, like, almost everyone who's, like, almost everyone gets their comeuppance. At least with the principal dies. That makes me happy. Or the headmaster, sorry. But I know, there's mixed feelings about Joan, but Joan is a product of her times. Not a person I'd want to spend a lot of time with. But no. How can John Smith, who has some part of the Doctor in him, fall in love with such a doofus?
Such a doofus. I don't know, man. It's his stupid, silly human self, right? So, who knows? I also think it's
why
a whole...
Why is
maybe
stupid,
it's just
silly human self so different from this Doctor self?
I don't know. I mean, allegedly every cell in his body changes if he looks exactly the same, so that's stupid.
Right?
But I think, you know, maybe that's like a commentary on, like, human attraction. Like, we like who we like, and there's not really a rhyme or reason to it, really. I'm just saying. And I feel like maybe that's one way to interpret, like, why did he fall in love with this random woman who doesn't seem to be very, like, just seemed like that appealing to, like, a modern audience, right? So,
right.
I think that's one way to read it. Like, human attraction is so fickle and weird. And, like,
maybe
so,
she was
like,
really hot, like, in 1913 or something.
You know what I noticed? She was still wearing her wedding ring.
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, okay, damn. Girl, okay. You were having second thoughts about this? Like, what? But I guess it was a first date, so maybe it wouldn't... That, a first date's not a thing to take your ring off for. But, hey, none of this eyebrow-raising stuff. Anyway.
The thing is... I think that's another reason why I had mixed feelings when I first watched this episode. It's one of the more frustrating aspects about Doctor Who, about how everyone falls in love with him. You know?
I mean, yeah. Oh, okay. I know I want to close the episode soon, but I'm just going to get this out there real quick. At least two times in the two-parter, people are gushing. So, like, Martha and Tim Latimer are gushing about how wonderful and amazing the Doctor is, right? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
So, I was telling Andy, who, again, hasn't really seen too much of the new Doctor Who, I was telling him, like, this is all fine and good and all, but it gets really old to hear the same, this is why the Doctor is amazing speech, like, 50 times. Because they do it constantly. And, like, I get it, he's a special alien who brings people on cool trips and is awesome, but, like, and saves the world. But, like, can we not gush about... He is, like... What was that weird speech Tim was giving about, like, darkness and shadow and light? And, like, okay, we get it.
Calm yourself.
Leave
it
alone.
You created an amazing TV show with a cool character. Like, calm your crap.
Oh, and I did also mention to Andy, like, do you know what a Mary Sue is? Because some people consider the Doctor to be a Mary Sue.
I would.
Yeah, he's a bit of a Sue. He's a bit of a Sue. But it works
it
somehow.
Works, it works for the show sometimes when the show remains in balance and he has enough people around him to show off the flaws that he does have.
Right, but he can be a bit of a Sue and it can be kind of grating in certain episodes.
Right, and in this case, like, everyone's falling in love with him. Another episode where this really bothered me was, I think, he's on, like, a spaceship Titanic or something.
Oh, God, yeah. That's and the one with Kylie Mignon, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And that weird alien, Bonacafalata, or whatever the heck his weird name was.
You apparently remember more about it than I do. I just remember that there was a spaceship, and...
It was Titanic, yeah.
And it was Titanic, and...
Kali Mignon's character Astrid or whatever her name.
Oh yeah, Astrid. Oh my god. Astrid, what a name is that? Sorry for our Astrid listeners. but you know, she just falls in love with him and it happens just god. Does everyone have to? That's why Donna was so refreshing, you know?
Right, she wasn't like, oh my gosh, I love the Doctor. She was just like perfect and
she kept it real.
Sassy and wonderful. Although, you know, shippers are gonna ship, so there's definitely people who ship Don and the Doctor, but, like, I enjoy their platonic relationship. That's why everyone loves her, because she's just that great platonic pal.
Right.
And there's no angst or any of that junk.
She keeps it real. I mean, yeah. She doesn't do that. Oh my gosh.
I love the Doctor. Yeah. It's nice to not see someone be like, oh my god, he is, like, the light of my life. Like, okay, thank you for being, like...
Because it does. It feels like the creators are just like, look what me made. He's awesome.
But you know, part of it, too, is just because they are so ingrained. Like, Doctor Who was such a pop culture establishment for those people when they were growing up. So they this reverence towards Doctor Who, right? So that's why I think that comes through. Because not only is, like, Rose is in love with the Doctor, the writers are in love with the Doctor. So that's why the Doctor's in love with the Doctor. Isn't he, though? In it, though? But yeah, like, I think that's why Donna's so great. It's like she's not blinded by this, like, all-consuming love for the Doctor. Yeah. I mean, she still likes him and respects him and is his friend, but it's not, like, fawning and brown-nosing. Yeah.
I was really hoping that when they introduced, like, the companions after Amy and Rory, that we'd get back to somebody who wasn't quite as fawning over the Doctor, but I couldn't get through much of...
Oh, you tried to get back into it? Oh, no, it's
well,
bad.
I watched... No, not recently, but, like, back when it was airing, I watched a few episodes of Clara... and it was painful, man.
Oh, I heard it got worse with Clara. I heard that Clara was worse than Amy, and I was like, oh, wow, I do not want to see that show.
I watched a few episodes. I think I got to this.
Because I don't know.
I can't even tell you how.
I just heard it was like the 12th Doctor was like creepily flirty with Clara, and it was just really awkward and weird.
I never made it to 12.
Yeah, so I don't even want to know.
I did watch the 50th anniversary special, though.
Oh, how was that? I didn't see that one.
That was... Well, because Tennant came back.
Was it worth seeing?
I had to watch it.
Was it worth seeing is what I'm asking you. Because even I haven't seen it. And I used to be the bigger Doctor Who fan.
I think it's worth a watch, but I honestly can't remember much about it.
Yikes.
I just... The only thing that I really remember was I was so happy to see Tennant as the Doctor again. That was it. That was all I wanted. And all I wanted was them to show me how he got a happy ending with Rose.
Aww.
I told you,
super
hard. I don't think they show that, but
aww.
I can't remember. They definitely must not have, because I would have remembered that, right?
Right.
But, God.
Yeah.
I'm just a little
shy. I think isn't the current companion a man? I thought it was going to be a different person because they had showcased this actress. Right. Wasn't going to be another like woman of color, but I don't know if she's coming into the series later, because when I last Wikipedia'd stuff, it was like, show me this picture of some like weird looking dude as a current companion, and I was like, who is this guy? I think maybe he was just like the companion for a Christmas special or a recent special, maybe that's what the deal is. I'm not really sure. I don't really want to return to the show until Stephen Moffat is no longer the showrunner,
exactly,
honestly.
What I was going
and that's
to
kind
say.
Of really awful of me, but also like I used to be one of sorry, my voice keeps giving out. I used to be one of his bigger supporters. Like, I would really defend Stephen Moffat, but, like, after a while, it just, all his flaws became too egregious to ignore. Like, the misogyny, the bad writing, the repetition of episodes and ideas and concepts to, like, ridiculous extremes. Like, I just am really tired of his writing, and I'm waiting for a new showrunner to come up, and then I'll, like, get back into the show. Because for now, it's just not... It's not worth watching, because, you know, I tried to get through season 6 and 7. I got through 6. It wasn't great. I got halfway through 7 and was like, this is too much. I've just been watching bad quality writing. I can't continue on this path, because there's just no point.
Where you're going, Anakin, I can't follow.
What?
Sorry. That was from Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, I was like, what? Okay.
Yeah. It was a very, very bad impression. So.
I haven't even seen that, so...
I was going to say the same thing. I'm not going to start rewatching or getting back into the show until Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, I have no interest in seeing the rest of season 7 and seeing... Yeah, I have no interest until Stephen Moffat steps down as showrunner. Like, he's okay for his one-off episodes, and I think when he was running Jekyll back in, what, 2005, I heard he was a much better writer. But I personally think the ego, like, fame and egotism have gotten to his head, and it just has made him think that he's a great writer when he's, well, he was good, but he just got worse. So
I think
it's just bad.
The big talent that he had was taking all these desperate pieces and bringing them together into a conclusion that was fulfilling and satisfying.
Yeah, very dramatic, very crazy, right. But fun. And
you can see that in the first episode of, or the first season of Sherlock, I think.
Right.
But the more that you would see his work, the more ambitious he got. You can see that from the transition from season 5 in Doctor Who to season 6, and where all these desperate pieces. Disparate pieces.
Disparate, yeah.
He couldn't tie them up anymore, and they just became
random nonsense. Randomness. Yeah,
and you can see that, like, you know, like
He's good at starting things, but he's not very good at ending things.
And that does not want me. That if you can't promise me a good conclusion, I'm not going to start a show, because knowing it's going to have a bad ending does not make me want to start.
Yeah.
The whole thing is you want to watch to find out what happens. If you know what's going to happen isn't going to be good, you don't want to watch that ending.
Yeah.
Like, think about the last... I know we should wrap up, but, like...
Yes.
The last episode of season 2 of Sherlock, it was this whole mystery of how Sherlock survived. And
let's not even get into that. Dear... Okay, it's fine.
Stephen Moffat not knowing how to finish.
Sorry.
Oh my god.
This is a PG-13 podcast, y'all. Sorry, Maggie. That's horrible. Okay, we're gonna go back to our scheduled programming now. Okay, yeah, he did not know how to wrap that season up, for sure. It was a mess. I mean, we had a great cliffhanger, but then, you know,
a cliffhanger only works if you have a resolution.
Yeah. It's like there was a cliffhanger, and then instead of the person like climbing off the cliff to the very top and surviving, the person just fell off the cliff and then miraculously survived, and which was not satisfying at all. But literally, someone fell off and survived, and it was not satisfying at all. Literally, that's what happened.
I mean, I think that was that moment was the beginning of the end for me.
Yeah, that was a turning point.
For Sherlock and for Doctor Who.
And I think we talked about this too. It just seems like he has, like, contempt for the viewers, which is extremely disconcerting.
At the very least, he doesn't have any respect.
Yeah, it's just a lack of respect to the people viewing your program, and that's never a good solution or formula. Like,
you
don't care about your viewers. Like,
you gotta...
We like your show. We're invested in your storytelling. We want to continue to support your show. Why would you just, like, throw us in the dumpster fire? Like, come on. So, I don't know. It's just, when a showrunner, like, actively shows contempt for his fan base, that's a pretty dark place to be, and I'm just not a fan of that. And I'm not really going to support you if you're kind of a jerk to your fans. So, bye, Felicia. Anyway,
this is ending on a much darker note than I had expected.
I'm sorry. I just have a lot of feelings about Stephen Moffat. None of them very particularly positive.
But there have been rumors that he's going to leave.
I hope so. Dear Lord, I hope so.
He's overstayed his welcome.
Let's not get too negative, Nancy, about this. Like, if you're going to get into Doctor Who, if you feel like you've seen this two-parter, you're like, wow, this is kind of something I like. I highly recommend seasons 1 to 4. I like 5. I know Melissa doesn't, but definitely seasons 1 to 4 of Doctor Who should be on your list of things to watch. It's a great show.
It really is.
Yeah. It's a fun show, generally pretty light. So if you're looking for some more lighter sci-fi, it's the way to go. There are some darker episodes, some more serious ones, but overall it's a fun show.
I've watched over a period of a few weeks, and I should have been writing my essay at the time, but it was a good choice.
Yeah.
I did fine. I passed the class.
It's a fun show. And then let me see what we are going to be covering next week. I think we're covering Star Trek 2009.
Very nice.
Yeah, because apparently this week and last week, I just want to do the shows and movies I was obsessed with in high school. So Doctor Who was one of them, and Star Trek 2009 is the other movie that I was obsessed with. Sci-fi fandom I was really obsessed with. And I think I had promised y'all that we were going to do a Star Trek 2009 episode at some point. So it's gonna happen, and I'm really excited for it. I actually haven't watched it in a long time, which is new for me, because I generally watch it every, I don't know, every 6 months or so, I'll kind of rewatch it. So it's been a while since I've seen it, but
Can I just say something?
It's not a good movie.
The entire Star Wars saga every 6 weeks back in middle school.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, even I wasn't that bad.
The entire saga.
Yeah.
Six movies.
And we'll get into this, but what I used to do was I used to work at a library, so we would just shelve books so we could listen to music when we were shelving books. I would literally listen to Star Trek 2009 when I was at work. Not the soundtrack. The movie. I would listen to the movie as if it was a podcast or an audiobook. I would listen to the movie while I was working, which was great, and again showed how crazy obsessed I was. I think I listened to the movie more than I've seen the movie at this point, honestly. But it's good. I mean, it still holds up as an audio-only format, so I give it props for that.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. So next week we'll be covering Star Trek 2009, we don't have a buffer yet, but we do have a schedule. So hopefully we won't get too sidetracked or backlogged. I know it's 2017. I know we're approaching our 1 year anniversary, which is like kind of cool and also exciting and crazy. Because I don't think I ever thought this podcast would last this long. But yeah, it's gonna be great. So we are still looking for more
determination. And skill, well, not our skill, but our love of sci-fi, definitely.
Our love of sci-fi and our love of talking to each other. So, yeah, please send us, even though we do have a schedule, and we're probably going to be spending a lot of this year talking about the new Sense8 season and the new Into the Badlands seasons. We'd love to get more suggestions from you guys on what we should watch. I think... you know, send some TV shows our way with POC, send some movies our way with POC. I think we definitely need a lot more movies than we need TV shows at this point, based on our schedule. And yeah, I mean, I guess we can always revisit shows that we've seen in the past. Like, we did some Static Shock, and maybe we'll go revisit stuff like that. We could revisit Doctor Who at some point, too. But yeah, send some suggestions our way. You can send it to our Gmail, which is sfincolor@gmail.com. We have a Twitter, a Tumblr, a Facebook. Those are all linked to, I mean, in the show description, there are links to those social media accounts.
And please like us on iTunes.
Yes, like us on iTunes. If you like the show and want to support the show, please give us like a 5-star rating and leave a review. Just, you know, it would really help us out. We get more viewers, or listeners rather, because we just get higher up in the algorithm for recommending shows to people.
The algorithm. It's that time of night.
It is that time of night. So yeah, thank you for listening and supporting our show. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.